When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We go round to Jay Pesci's mother, and you can still hear him banging in the car, and she's showing them a picture that she's painted of a dog. And it's quite yeah. That's brilliant. That's so brilliant.
That one's going east, that one's going west. It's all
and
good.
And that's sort of to show the heartlessness of it, and that these guys could kill you at any moment. And they're going to kill you in a completely brutal and reckless way, that they would have lost all humanity. And then the next frame, we see this innocent Henry Hill wanting to run errands for these guys because they're so glamorous. And it's the collision of glamour and violence that we actually now take for granted.
Hello, welcome to this episode of Flix Watcher. Joining us today, we have Viv.
Hi.
Rosie.
Hello.
And as always, Kobe.
Hello.
And we are reviewing Martin Scorsese's Goodfellas. Thank you as always to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts, anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to FlixWatcher Podcast. In our studio today, we have Viv and Rosie. If you would like to introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them about the work that you do, please.
Hi, I'm Viv Groskop. I'm a writer and a comedian, and I'm the author of a book called How to Own the Room, Women and the Art of Brilliant Speaking, which is also a top 10 iTunes podcast. We're now on series 4, coming up series 5 soon, featuring women from all different walks of life talking about what they do to own the room.
Have you got any tips for us to entice people to listen to a podcast? Don't want to give away your top tips, but something that can draw
people. Actually, I'm just going to give you for free, Kobe, my ultimate top tip. Okay. And I'm going to demonstrate it for you right now. I'll have to describe it, this being audio. It's to use a pointless pen. So what you do if you're feeling nervous and you have to speak in front of people, if you're in a meeting or you're standing up, as long as you can discipline yourself to not move this pen, I'm twitching it now. We can perhaps hear it. Discipline yourself to not move the pen and hold on to it. It can be a really good way of focusing your attention and reminding yourself to be as still as you can when you speak.
So it's about focusing your attention, not the attention of the audience.
It's a reminder to yourself to be still, and it's a courtesy to the audience, because people are much easier to understand when they are still.
Okay.
So moving around a lot is not something you want to be doing.
Well, then it can be, like, you know,
I run around the stage when I'm doing stand-up, because I demonstrate kind of this, that one of my kind of favourite routines is one about giant lesbians and teeny tiny gay men. So I'm kind of running from one end of the stage to the other, from sort of a really doing a tall kind of shape to a really tiny one. And people like the physicality of that. So it does kind of, I know there is this idea you're meant to be still, but I think I completely disobey that rule, and I don't know whether it's to my own detriment or not.
No, I think it's completely depends on the context. And the problem is that for most, you do that for a reason. Yeah, you know, you're doing it to enhance that story and act it out, and it really brings it to life. It is one of your finest moments. I love that bit of your act, Rosie. But for most people, they move not because it's part of what they're putting across to people, because they're nervous.
Yeah, and the nerves come across. In portrayal. Rosie, you kind of introduced yourself a bit.
I did a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
Well, look at me just jumping ahead. I'm Rosie Wilby. I'm a comedian and author of the book Is Monogamy Dead? And also host and creator of the Breakup Monologues podcast, which is a chat show often recorded live at King's Place, where myself and two or sometimes three guests will share breakup stories and dissect the weirdness of love, relationships, ghosts, ghosting, divorce parties, micro cheating, who knows what. Viv Groskop has been a guest on the show, and we've also had lots of fabulous people, Richard Herring and Dolly Alderton, lots of fabulous people. Sophie Hagen has been on as well, Brett Goldstein. We also had Lynn Ruth Miller telling us about dating and sex for the over 80s, which was illuminating.
I've seen Lynn in Edinburgh a couple of times.
She's an experience. She's brilliant.
So we've had Alex Fox as well, who's been on the show.
She was on with Alex Fox.
Alex Fox, brilliant.
She's great.
So we're here talking today about Goodfellas, which is your choice, Viv.
Yes.
Can you, emphatically, yes. Can you tell us why you chose it and give us a 2-minute synopsis, please?
I chose Goodfellas because it is a masterpiece of cinema. I think it's maybe one of the top three films of all time.
Right.
And I think I'm far from being alone in saying that. I think it's generally recognised as one of the great masterpieces of cinema and of Scorsese's career. Made in 1990, this film is a refreshing 2 hours and 28 minutes. And it really is about, and it's very interesting because this actor didn't particularly get recognised, I think, in the legacy of this film. It's about Ray Liotta, who plays the character of Henry Hill, and who is a gangster. This is all about Italian mafia in New York. And it opens in 1955. And in 1955, Henry Hill, played by Ray Liotta, is a kid in an Italian, Irish, American family. And he is failing at school, feeling ignored by his parents in this kind of tenement crowded life. And he can see all around him that there are these wise guys who are having a glamorous life. They have gorgeous suits. All the women are interested in them. They appear to have loads of money. They're always flashing the dollar bills and tipping people. They have great hair. They're really sharp. And that's who, as a teenager, he wants to be. So he starts hanging out with these guys. And then we follow him over the next few decades, leading right up into the 80s. And it's an extraordinary sweep of a life, this film. And we see how he interacts with particular characters. So obviously people will know Robert De Niro as Jimmy, Joe Pesci as Tommy, Paul Sorvino as Paulie, these characters who become a second family to Henry Hill. And all he really wants is to be one of them and to be on a par with them. And for a long time through the 60s and the 70s, he does achieve that and he becomes part of the gang and he's one of the guys. And then we gradually see it all start to unfold. And one of the really interesting points of this film is how there's this dynamic that in order to really be part of this gang, because this is a film about belonging, I think, to be part of this gang, you have to be proper, proper Italian-American and you have to be from Sicily. And Henry Hill isn't because he's got Irish blood. And it's the same for Robert De Niro's character. Mm. So it's all about whether you're going to become a made man. And that's all they're really after. It's about hierarchy and it's about masculinity. And I love this film so much. I just think it's so beautifully shot. The characterization's so incredible. The costumes are amazing. The period detail, you know, from 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, it's just so rich.
Before we get to Helen, I was not happy with the collars in any of this.
The collars?
Yeah.
What?
You feel there's wrong detail.
The collars. No, just the way they kind of came, like really pointed collars that came really close
tailored
to the
tailored suits.
That's not how tailored suits worked.
What then?
I mean, it was back then, but I couldn't stop looking at how these collars worked. The way they're like pinched so close to each other, you can't even see the knot of the tie. Anyway, Helen, sorry. Your thoughts on Goodfellas?
I can't believe you've watched Goodfellas. That isn't your main takeaway.
I'm hovering over. Look at the collars here. They're so weird.
It's weird. I agree.
It's not weird.
Can I ask?
How's that not
can
weird?
Can I ask early on? how many times have you seen this film before? Because for me, this was maybe like the sixth or seventh time that I'd seen it.
This is probably third or fourth for me.
Okay.
Well, I was really surprised. I don't think I have watched it before, which is so odd because I have watched a lot of Scorsese's back catalogue. But I don't think I'd watch it.
I think I'm definitely in double figures.
Okay.
You're just getting a lay of the land here.
Okay. Yeah, well, I think we need to talk about this film as a phenomenon that most people will have seen. It's not something new for people.
Yeah.
So, thoughts, Helen?
So I had a bit of a Scorsese phase when I was in my late teens, and that's one.
Scorsese.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I basically just tried to kind of watch all of his films, and I remember watching this and just thinking it was incredible. There's just so many things that I think are brilliant, and without Scorsese making this, we wouldn't have a lot of the films that we have now.
Or TV shows.
Mm. Or TV shows or anything like that. And I have the soundtrack. I love the soundtrack. The soundtrack is amazing. All the performances are great in it. And like you said, the costume is a period piece as well. It's incredible. And the level of detail that all the characters went to into researching their real life characters, and Scorsese went into making sure that they felt like these real people, and these things, you know, fictionalization on the way, but these things really happen. And the shot where he enters the club through the kitchen is still amazing now. I mean, we take it for granted that that's kind of, you know, it's a long tracking shot, but watching that, you know, probably when I watched it in, it's kind of like the late mid 90s, I was just amazing. I think it's still that brilliant, and it's massively sweary. It's not quite as violent, I don't think, as maybe people think it is. There's a couple of particularly violent scenes, but I think people think it's a lot more violent than it actually is, because outside of those two scenes.
Which two scenes are we talking about? We all had spoilers in.
Well,
it's the boot of the car.
The beginning. Of the car.
Beginning.
Yeah.
The boot of the car is at the beginning, but it's also repeated later on.
So it's the same. It's the same guy. Billy Bats. Gets whacked.
Yeah.
But there's also things like, I remember the thing that I think I remembered the most as the use of Layla towards the end. I think that's when I think about Goodfellas, that's one of the things that I really think about. And towards the end part of the film, where he's obsessed with the helicopters, the use of soundtrack and how it's filmed has really stuck in my memory.
Rosie, your first time watching it?
Yeah, well, I am really surprised that I didn't watch this before, because I came to London after graduating in the mid-90s, and I really tried to catch up on all forms of culture. I was working a little bit in the film industry as a production assistant and production coordinator on some gay films for a kind of queer film company and stuff. And I did catch up on a lot of Scorsese films. I remember thinking that in particular, I thought Taxi Driver was an incredibly powerful film, obviously another one of his collaborations with De Niro. I also... even though I wasn't a comedian yet, I quite enjoyed The King of Comedy, not one of their most famous, perhaps, collaborations, but I particularly enjoyed that one. But I was so surprised that I hadn't seen Goodfellas. And I think it's quite strange seeing something like this for the first time now, because I totally appreciate that it is part of an important lineage that has led to some of the pop culture that we have now, gangster films and crime TV series and so on. But I felt watching it now, it had been so surpassed by The Sopranos, by series like Narcos and all the kind of crime TV series that we have, that I just felt it felt somehow weak to me. I know, I'm surprised, because I know it's supposed to be a classic. I just felt it was a little too dimensional. I think in The Sopranos, you have so much more nuance. You understand why the characters are the way they are, kind of much more about why they've got into that life. You know, you begin The Sopranos with Tony Soprano in therapy. You have much more rich female characterization as well, because, of course, interesting, Lorraine Bracco, who is Karen in Goodfellas, turns up as Dr. Melfi in The Sopranos. And she's a much more powerful and intriguing character, because she is in charge of Tony Soprano and what's going on in his brain. Whereas, you know, even though she's a feisty gangster's wife in Goodfellas, she kind of is a bit stuck and has to stay. And I sort of feel like it's just a load of, you know, macho men going around killing people. And I, you know, I don't mind watching a bit of violence, but I thought too open in the way that it does with the scene in the boot of the car. It seemed pointless, and I couldn't understand why it opened like that. And why you sort of have a, you know, you kind of have a sort of flash forward, if you like, and then you go back to that scene. Some of the narrative structure, and then suddenly when it suddenly starts rushing at the end, when he's going through that day, Ray Liotta is where he sees the helicopters and everything. Mm. The pacing of it seems weird to me. I agree that things like the tracking shot would have been absolutely pioneering in 1990, but now we've had Birdman and we've had a whole film that's one single tracking shot, or arguably. You know, so I kind of feel like, yes, the use of music is brilliant. I loved all the music, that's true, but I did not love it nearly as much as I thought you're supposed to love Goodfellas. I you know, I found Joe Pesci's character awful. Me and my girlfriend both are just like, I can't watch him anymore. I can't listen to him. We actually watched it in two stints because we were just so tired of him just jumping up into a rage. And I wanted more nuance. I wanted him to be in therapy. I want to know why he's so filled with rage. Why is he on such a short fuse?
Yeah, you don't really go to Goodfellas for nuance, I'm afraid.
Well,
I think the thing here is the problem we have with Sopranos is that Sopranos, you've got a TV series and you can explore that.
You've got so much time.
And that's the benefit. And that's why a lot of people talk about the golden age of TV, and that you can go into the depths of these characters. And that's where sometimes I think a show, if Goodfellas was to be made now, I'd be quite happy if this actually was remade as a TV show.
Yeah,
I'd
actually, great.
I'd like to understand that. I'd happily watch that. And when you hear about TV shows, when you hear about films being remade as TV shows, I'm really quite interested, because I do prefer the long form drama of it. And you said 2.5 hours at the top, and I was like, I could spend a lot more time with these characters and go into a bit more depth. This is like the third or fourth time I've watched this, and the first time I watched it, I didn't get it. But with each watch, I've enjoyed it more, and things like the tracking shots and things like how the camera moves between characters, anticipates where characters are going to go to, was something I didn't appreciate when I first kind of started watching film. I was just like, well, you just think putting the camera where the person is, and you don't kind of appreciate what the skill is involved in that. So I think with each rewatch, it gets better and better. Huge fan of Sopranos, and I do really enjoy the lineage that it's built up. But I think there's that thing of like if you watch Citizen Kane, you almost have to have an education as to why Citizen Kane is a good film before you watch it. It's like the first time you had these kind of shots, the first time they did Steadicam into the XYZ. And I think that's perhaps might be what a bit of you're feeling now, is that you've seen the benefit of the skills that these guys pioneered decades ago. And there's maybe that, I don't know if you have to have the appreciation of it, but it's still, you need to pay homage to it, or do you kind of think, well, they do it better now?
Well, this is a very, very interesting point that you guys have raised, because I don't want us to go into an era where we can't watch films anymore. But you're right on some level that this long form narrative that has become so popular, and even things like, you know, I watch Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
And to compare that with the original novel, and then you've got a piece of television that is maybe 30 hours long, and it's had dozens of writers working on it and has had, you know, millions and millions of pounds pumped into it, compared to one person's work. There's no comparison, just as there's no comparison with the dozens of hours of The Sopranos and
but
the 2 hours
Tale
of
Tale is quite problematic, isn't it? I mean, the TV series, so I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I think it's very interesting how our attention is becoming divided now, that we learn to appreciate things in different ways. Yeah. And part of it is to do with the long form and that there's more space to explore. And part of it is to do with this idea you're talking about, Rosie, of, you know, we're educated now. Like, we know about this kind of filming, and it doesn't feel so fresh maybe anymore. But for me, I really appreciate Goodfellas as a brilliant film. You know, it's not to do with when it was made. And I mean, it's pretty weird that it was made in 1990, in a way, if you think when The Godfather was made, and it feels like something that could have been made in the 1970s. And that's something really interesting. I think it's its own little thing that exists as a perfect little piece of film. And I hope we've made it clear, by the way, that it's based on a true story and that was taken from a book, and Scorsese really wanted to adapt this. And a lot of the events were happening more or less in real time. So as they were filming this, these guys were being tried and put in prison. And so they were able to have, and you know, Henry Hill was in the witness protection program and they were able to have a very small amount of access to him. So there's an interesting dynamic there of them representing this true story. But I feel that the way Scorsese represented it and what's made it such a lasting film is that it's this kind of fable. It's this magic little sort of horrible fairy tale of like a disastrous bro movie. You know, where all the bros, they're going to kill you. Like, and that's, you know, the tension and the reason they show that shot at the beginning of the film before then going, so that's happening in the 80s when we see this guy has been killed and they've put him in the back of the car and he's not quite dead and you can hear him banging in the boot of the car, and then they go around to Joe Pesci's mother and you can still hear him banging in the car and she's showing them a picture that she's painted of a dog. It's quite, that's brilliant. It's so brilliant.
That one's good. That one's going west. It's all good.
And that's sort of to show the heartlessness of it, and that these guys could kill you at any moment, and they're going to kill you in a completely brutal and reckless way, that they would have lost all humanity. And then the next frame, we see this innocent Henry Hill wanting to run errands for these guys because they're so glamorous.
You see some,
and it's the collision of glamour and violence that we actually now take for granted because of a lot of brilliant TV stuff. That collision of, you know, you see it in House of Cards as well.
We see some of the, I think in terms of violence, it's perhaps not as violent as you think, but the contrast, and particularly Joe Pesci's character, the way he flips on nothing, like shooting Spider in the foot and then shooting him and killing him dead for very, very, very little.
But there's something very brave with Joe Pesci's character that I had forgotten, having seen this several times. That famous scene, which I think is one of the most famous scenes in all of cinema, of amusing Hal.
Yeah, funny Hal.
I'm a clown. You know, that scene, it's very early on. Mm. It's in the sort of maybe first 15 minutes. And that is educating us from the beginning of these guys look glamorous and we see them through Henry Hill's eyes, but we know that they're killers. And not only are they killers, they're psychopaths. Mm.
Mm. I think with the Billy Bat scene, when they first get him in the club, and it's just as a result of go and get your fucking your shine box, and that's what turns Joe Pesci. The thing that surprises me is that how quickly Henry Hill and Jimmy Irish,
Robert De Niro.
Yeah, they jump in on that as well. As like, okay, one of us is going down for this, or one of us is getting involved, everyone has to get involved. And they didn't even seem to bat an eyelid before piling in, did they?
Well, I guess at that point, there was no turning back, really, because that's the moment where basically things start to go wrong.
For Joe Pesci, at least.
Well, for all of them, that's when the turning point, which is why it's there at the start of the film, because that is the moment that they cross the line with the made man. And that's when they start getting into the wrong deals. That's where they start, you know, going for these huge heists. It's all like the moment, everything after that moment is what ruins it for everyone.
Is it that? Because I think when's the Lufthansa heist? Is that after that though, when everyone's successful? Because it's when Joe Pesci becomes certainly a marked man, and that's when, that's why he was never going to get, he was going to die.
Yeah.
But Henry Hill died of old age. Jimmy, what's his face, goes to prison. And I don't necessarily think, I think it was just Joe Pesci who was like, everyone said, well, it was him. The other guys were just there and they're his friends.
But it has a great suspense to it because there's this recklessness of, well, Joe Pesci isn't necessarily going to die because he could kill everyone else first. Mm. And he's very free and easy with his, he never knows when he's going to kill somebody. And we see that from the spider moment where, you know, the first time he shoots him in the foot, the next time he just shoots him.
I thought, for me, De Niro's best moment was when he's in the phone box, when he's crying, heard that his friend has been whacked. Yeah.
That's such a great scene.
Yeah.
I liked it after the Lufthansa heist when he was trying to, like, he told everyone to stop, not to spend anything, just be fucking sensible.
Well, this is another thing that it's actually really funny. There's a lot of really funny moments in it as well.
Maury with a wig.
Yep, Maury. Yeah, it's really funny. And it is this really absurd lifestyle that they managed to get away with for so long, basically stealing stuff, killing people. And, you know, they live like kings for so long and got away with it nearly.
And I think that's why I struggle with it, because it is true that they behave like that and got away with it and killed nearly. People. Well, yeah, okay, nearly, but got away with it for a long time. So, yeah, I kind of struggle with the fact that that is something to be celebrated, really.
Oh, yeah, well, this is the celebration element is really interesting and important, because Martin Scorsese said from the beginning that he didn't want people to revere these guys. Okay. He didn't want it to be glamorous. And for me, I think he kind of messed up. And that's why...
He made him too glamorous.
Yeah, I think he makes... And I think it's almost the opposite, that this film succeeds because you think... Wow, they do have an amazing life.
Yeah.
And yeah, they've decided to kill people and live completely without morals. But the life is exciting. And you see the belonging that they get from it and this, and how lost they are without it. Mm. And he lets you see how seductive it is. Of course, I have not followed any of the life choices of anybody involved in Goodfellas.
Not yet.
But and I love, you were mentioning, Rosie, about the sort of problematic nature of this is a very masculine film There are quite a lot of female characters in it, but they're very much periphery. They're very much wallpaper. But we see a lot of it through the eyes of Lorraine Bracco as Karen Hill.
She actually gets a narration, which I always forget.
She does.
Yeah, yeah. And we see that she has to become seduced by this world. Mm. Because initially she thinks Henry Hill is a complete idiot. And then when she gradually thinks, okay, maybe he's not that bad, and it's after the tracking scene going through the nightclub and he's high-fiving everybody and giving them money, and they bring champagne and they bring a special table out to the front. I love how they bring the special table out. Yeah. And the tablecloth, and everyone's looking at them, and it's like, you know, those pictures, that old pictures that you see of Ava Gardner and Marilyn Monroe at the front of a nightclub with JFK, not literally, but you know, that kind of thing. And she suddenly falls in love with this world. And the more time goes on, she, you know, there's a scene where she's wearing Pucci, and you know, it's very cleverly done. And that was, it almost felt as if it's got a tinge of that sort of nudge nudge wink wink of like Dynasty, Dallas, Joan Collins, you know, it's all pretty tacky, but we see it through her eyes and we kind of believe it, because you have to believe that that lifestyle was worth living.
Yeah.
Otherwise, why would she put up with it? Because we have sympathy for her.
Well, she's not a fan of a lot of it, is she? She's in love with Henry. She doesn't like...
Well, she's like, I was very attracted to him, so yeah. I had to stay.
But she doesn't like the other gangster ladies.
So they've got bad hair and bad skin.
Yeah, bad hair and bad... She doesn't get on with that. She's
too much makeup and bad skin.
Well, and
yeah.
She's
been
Jewish.
Beaten.
She's yeah. Jewish, and they're all Italian.
And
Irish,
she just
Italian.
Has to accept that he has other lovers. He has another girlfriend, and then another girlfriend
she
after that.
She has to smuggle sausages into the prison.
Yeah.
I love the babysitter, incidentally.
The babysitter's so funny,
a
isn't
great,
she?
Sort of totally corrupt, morally bankrupt character who's very casually smuggling drugs in the days before there was any airport security. They're just taking it all to her legs and putting it in nappies, and she's just going along with it to get the money.
I think...
there's some great life tips in this movie.
I was trying to compare it to The Sopranos in terms of flashiness. I feel really sorry for Henry Hill and the guys, because they do get a lot of this money, but they don't seem to know how to hold on to it. And they're, you know, gambling it away and doing all
you
the
were,
drugs.
Like, wishing you could be their financial advisor.
Yeah, I was like, guys, come and get an ISA. I know it's not America. I know we're not UK, but get an ISA. Put your money in there. Guaranteed return for like 20 years. Get it out later on.
Well, I was just going to say, I think really interesting, because he made Casino, what was it, like 5 years after this? Which is sort of the same film, but not really.
Yeah, it is. It's 5 years later, and it is almost like a remake.
But it's not, but it kind of is. Mm. And I think there's a lot in that that I really enjoy as well, even though he is kind of repeating a lot of the things that he's done here. I guess that's a Scorsese.
Before we go into the score, do we have a favourite Scorsese film around here? And how much are you looking forward to The Irishman?
I mean, The Irishman is crazy. You know, who would believe that they would reunite Joe Pesci, Al Pacino, Robert De Niro? I mean,
well, Al Pacino's for the first time with those guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing, and I'm only worried that it's going to be awful. But
see, that's
the worry.
Yeah. But it won't be. It'll be amazing. Speaking of Scorsese films, I want to mention my absolute favourite Scorsese film. I'm interested if you guys have seen it, Hugo.
I have
Hugo.
Hugo.
Oh, no.
That's your favourite one?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
I absolutely love that movie. Do you know it?
Yeah, I've seen it. I saw it in the cinema.
I love that movie. It's a love letter to cinema. And it's all about him being a little boy. Like, it's even before that kind of Henry Hill stage of realising what adults do and, oh, that looks exciting and look at the guys over there. It's when you're really, really young and dreaming of things and dreaming of stories and filmmaking. And, oh, it's so magical. And Sacha Baron Cohen is so brilliant in it. You obviously hate it.
I don't hate it. I just don't.
I think it's
it probably wouldn't be in my top
movie.
Five.
It's incredible.
Helen, do you have a favourite Scorsese film?
So probably Raging Bull.
Yeah. I've not seen Raging Bull or Casino.
Out of the ones I've seen, I know I've seen Raging Bull a long, long time ago, and I have seen Casino. I did think Taxi Driver was very powerful, but I kind of enjoyed The King of Comedy, which is because I think I'm not massively a fan of gangster films and violent kind of mob macho kind of films. So that, you know, I'm just more of an art house indie world cinema kind of geek. So I suppose there was a more of an offbeat feel about something like The King of Comedy that I really liked. Maybe I'll say that. And I think, as far as kind of...
And you're a comedian as well.
Yeah, I'm a comedian as well. So I think kind of, you know, big directors of a certain vintage, I'm probably more of a Spielberg girl in terms of my childhood and my sort of lineage of films that I've loved, so...
I think
Scorsese, I can see he is great. I appreciate him, but I don't have the same connection that you all do, I think.
I don't think I'm that big a Scorsese-ophile. I think he's great. I think, like yourself, a more Spielberg kind of film viewer.
You can be both.
I know you can be, but I'm saying that's what I'm saying. I'm more.
Scorsese is also things I think people forget, but like Wolf of Wall Street,
The Departed,
Boardwalk Empire, Age of Innocence.
Oh, I did love that.
Yeah, so he's got a much broader range than sometimes people think.
No, I think Goodfellas is probably my favourite overall. As what I would say is like a classic Scorsese film, but I think Departed is higher up there than a lot of people.
I find that
would.
So easy to watch.
Yeah,
I think don't know what really it is cool about film. It, but I just find that if it's on, then I'm like, right.
Just don't anyone ever watch Cape Fear because you'll never sleep again.
Oh, yeah.
You'll never travel in a vehicle again without checking underneath it.
Should we head to the scores, guys?
Welcome to Flixwatcher Scores. All of our scores are out of 5. You may have decimal places, and we'll start with you, Viv, with the recommendability, please.
It has to be a 5. 5.0. I'm doing the face of people at an ice skating event, the Olympics.
What were the judges?
5.0. Because this is an essential film to see. I think you cannot understand cinema. You can't understand acting. You can't understand New York. This is a quintessential New York movie. There's so much that you need to know by seeing this film.
I think seen as, I don't know, it doesn't set me as a New York film because you don't see, I think a lot of New York is the city and being in there in Manhattan and stuff. You don't really have that, do you? But it's certainly, for me, it's that kind of tri-state area of New Jersey and New York kind of suburbs, more like The Sopranos. Is that?
But it's a 5. I mean, who would you not recommend Goodfellas?
Well, Rosie.
It's tough because... I'm kind of surprised how I didn't love it. I'll kind of go a 3 because there are people I would recommend it to, but actually, a lot of my friends are probably more, kind of looking for something with a more female sensibility. I know what my friends tend to like, so I probably wouldn't recommend it to loads of them. So I'll go 3.
Helen?
I'm going to give it a 5. I just think it's brilliant. Just from the first time that I watched it, and just there's so many things that stay in your memory where, you know, at the end where there's My Way They wanted to use the Frank Sinatra one, but they weren't allowed, so they used Sid Vicious.
Sid Vicious, yeah, I love it.
And he, you know, the and you know, the Layla and the meat trucks, and them just kind of like discovering all the bodies to that. There's just so many things that I really love. And you know, this was kind of peak De Niro, I think. He'd kind of
that's important, isn't it? Because he's with Meet the Parents et al.
The, I won't have a word said that, against Meet the Parents.
Well, Meet the Parents is fine, but the subsequent ones, that's what it's the et al. Meet the yeah. Fockers.
Meet the Fockers.
No. That's really bad. And the Little Fockers as well. That's the worst.
Is there a third one?
Yeah.
We love the Fockers in our house.
The first one I find great. But now it's just doing, yeah, anyway, Karen.
Yeah, I mean, the first one, this is peak, definitely peak De Niro. And yeah, and the soundtrack's great. I love it.
I'm going for 4.1 here. Lots of people I couldn't recommend it to because literally within 2 minutes you're stabbing a guy quite happily in the chest in a car boot. So it would be put on a lot of people I know off. But it is pretty much otherwise essential watching, I think. But I think I kind of err on Rosie's side. I think I'd rather watch Sopranos, and I'm looking forward to rewatching Sopranos at some point soon, and I think that gets me a bit more excited than Goodfellas.
Yeah, traitors.
But I'm looking forward to I'm super looking forward to watching The Irishman. Yeah. I'm looking forward to watching that a lot.
I don't know, I think it's more because the film choices of basically all of the leads recently have not really been great.
No.
And I don't know whether it's going to be like kind of like wheeling out the greats and them just kind of like shuffling through it, or whether he is actually going to work his magic eyebrow magic and get a good performance, because that's where he stores his power, Scorsese, in his wonderful eyebrows. I would be sad if it's not a great, at least if it's not a great film, if they're kind of like a bit naff in it, but the film's still great, then I'll probably be okay. But I the thought of watching a bad Scorsese film, I find really sad.
Do you think it has to be surpass every expectation, otherwise it just wouldn't be?
Well, my expectations are quite low, given that I just...
But do you think other people's expectations are quite high though, aren't they?
Well, I don't know, because
I think people's fears are great.
Yeah, and also there's a lot of young people who probably don't really know that much about Scorsese.
They probably don't care about this.
No.
Really.
You know.
Let's round them up.
And do what with them?
Put them in a Scorsese re-education camp. What else?
I guess if you tell
how
them
long
that
is it? This how, is the guy, how many hours is it?
This is the guy that made Wolf of Wall Street. I think that'll get people over the line.
Maybe.
Yeah.
If they don't know who he is and they don't want to go and see a film that's got Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci and Al Pacino, then, you know, their life is their own reward.
But I think you find nowadays there's these kids that just haven't had the same education as yourselves. I was trying to explain, when I was working, I work with a few startups, and there was a young girl there wearing a Bill and Ted's t-shirt. She hadn't watched the film. She was just wearing the t-shirt. And I was like, oh, you like Bill and Ted? What's that? Sorry.
But this is it's so weird, t-shirt. Isn't it? Because it's like saying, you know, I wasn't alive when All About Eve was made. Am I going to see All About Eve? Yes. I mean, there are basic things. Like if you're interested in cinema, if you're interested in, you know.
Oh, it should be. I mean, it's great. Life. All About Eve was brought. First time I watched All About Eve was when someone brought it here. And I was like, this is amazing. This is great. And that's one of those films where you don't have to explain why it's good. You just like absorb it, compared to Citizen Kane, which is a good fun film, but then when someone explains why it's good, that adds an extra layer to it. But All About Eve was just like, well, this is a great film.
We're not asking them to watch Battleship Potemkin here. We're just asking them to watch Goodfellas.
You're fighting a good fight. I like it. Yeah. Repeat viewing score, Viv.
5. Of course. Yeah,
so you've watched it like 6 or so times,
yeah,
you say.
I've watched it 6 or 7 times. Yeah. This last viewing for this spectacular podcast I undertook, having not seen it for maybe 4 or 5 years, right. And I was slightly worried that too much time had elapsed, too many Netflix TV series had been watched,
yep.
I would have ruined my own ability to see this film in the way that I want to see it. But no, it's still got it.
Rosie, it's your first time watching it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I will give it another chance at some point. I'll go 3 again.
Helen?
I wish I'd made a note of how many times I've seen it, because when I first saw it, I probably saw it maybe 3 or 4 times in a year.
Right.
Maybe even more than that.
How old were you when you first saw it?
Maybe, I don't know, 16, maybe 15.
Okay. Repeat bean score?
4.5. I was wondering if I would love it as much as I used to rewatching it. I think I was like a little bit the same. It's 2.5 hours, but basically it spans 1955 to 1980. So I think it does a pretty good job of keeping the runtime for 2.5 hours, and I don't think it sags. It's a pleasurable 2.5 hours for me.
I'd love to watch this in this, even if it was like a limited series. I think that would be absolutely outstanding. I'd love that more. But I did, as soon as it started, well, you suggested it, Viv, and I thought, yeah, I've not seen that for a while. That sounds great. And then within 5 minutes of the stabbing, I was like, oh, yes, let me just settle in again.
I'd love a good stabbing. Yeah.
I do live in Camden. But yeah, so I'm definitely going to watch it again. And I really, really enjoyed this rewatch. And having said I'm not that big a rewatcher or Scorsese fan, I do need to rewatch a few of his films, Departed. I'm not seeing Wolf of Wall Street again. I'm not sure I will do so straight away. Mm. But I think this is probably one of his most rewatchable ones. And I've not seen Raging Bull ever. Maybe will do at some point. But maybe I should see that before watching this again.
I mean, they're different.
But King of Comedy, sorry. Films. I love King of Comedy. I've only seen that once.
I think King of Comedy is more disturbing than Goodfellas.
Yeah, okay.
It really is an exploration of a psychopath.
Yeah.
at close quarters.
So I'm going to give it a 4, because I think it bears rewatching, and I think it gets better. It does get better with rewatch. Small screen score.
Oh, yes. Well, this is an interesting one, because I have never seen it in the cinema.
If it came on at Prince Charles, would you make your way towards watching it?
Yeah, I would actually. And I'm just planning to go and see a lot of films that I've only seen on small screen in cinema, like quite old films. So yeah, do I think it needs to be seen in a cinema? This is quite an important question though, you see. I'm going to give this a 4.9 because I do think it works very well on a small screen and it loses virtually nothing, but I want to pay homage to the greatness of the cinema theatre. And yeah, I do think ultimately the perfect viewing would be in the cinema.
Rosie?
It seemed to work pretty well on the small screen. I would probably like to see it on a bigger screen and kind of get more of the impact of the tracking shots and so on, and hear the sound on, you know, big speakers. So, maybe I'll go 3.5.
Helen?
Yeah, I've never seen this at the cinema and watched it many times to begin with on a VHS.
Yeah. On a big cathode ray TV,
yeah.
4x3.
And then an even like smaller one on my, like, one that went to uni with me.
Yeah, 14 inch. Yeah.
Weighs more than a child.
Yeah.
I would like to see it in the cinema as it was meant to be viewed. But, you know, those years of watching it, it's not, I've still enjoyed it. So I'm going to go for a 4.
Yeah, I'm going to go for a 4 as well. I think I would like to see it to get a bigger impact and to absorb, like I say, Rosie, the tracking shots and how it's been kind of put together. The music's never been that big a feature for me in this. It's never that. I think he's a lot more subtle than Quentin is with his sound mixing of his songs. So maybe they don't hit me as much as it does for yourself, Helen. The biggest one was the Sid Vicious version of My Way that hit me. And of course, there's always the, it's just a shadow.
Yes,
way.
Give Me Shelter.
Give Me Shelter, there you go. Which is always in.
Yes.
Which is always in the Scorsese film. So I'm going to go for 4. So what did you say, Helen?
4 as well.
4.
Yeah.
Well, I think you could watch this on a phone. No problem.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Oh, I don't know if you should watch anything on a phone.
Oh, contentious.
Take it everywhere with you and watch it every day on your phone.
Engagement score, Viv.
Yeah, this is where I say that having watched it multiple times, mm-hmm. for me personally, it is always engaging. But it is interesting, and I think, Helen, you raised this point, and Rosie, you mentioned it too, that there's a slight unevenness of pacing.
Right.
And I do think, and I wonder as well, that if, you know, Ray Liotta was not really garlanded for this performance in the way I think he should have been. Mm. So
it's surprising, isn't it?
Yeah, Joe Pesci had an Oscar nomination, so did Lorraine Bracco. I think there were other awards like Golden Globes and BAFTAs and things where Robert De Niro was mentioned. Ray Liotta wasn't really in the picture. And I think that there's an unevenness at the end of the film, which there's something quite clever going on there where he's descending, you know, he's descending into hell. He's taking too many drugs. He's absolutely green in the face and sweating for like the last sort of quarter of the film.
It's quite distressing, that part, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and I really enjoy that, and I'm on board with that, and I love Ray Liotta's performance. It's kind of hideous to watch, but I think it's brilliant. But I know from other people watching this film that part of it kind of turns them off, and that's the moment where their attention starts to wander. And
that's what you're saying.
That's where our attention wanders.
And this kind of tension between the glamour and the hideousness, all the glamour has dropped away. And so for that reason, I shall give 4.5.
Rosie?
I'm going to go 2.5 because the pacing does feel strange. The narrative structure of it feels odd to me.
I'm getting out my spade.
Oh, I'm scared.
And the lime. Helen?
I don't know how you cannot be engaged in this because you just got to go, what could possibly happen next? And that when he does descend into that, there's the thing with the sauce, and it cuts back to his brother's like got to keep the heat on the sauce, stirring the sauce.
Yeah, he's descending, and his brother going is back, stirring the sauce on the hob.
And you know the journey he's got to make. He's going back, and he's going to this, and he's seeing this, and he's seeing that. I think it's great because it's taken them away from everything that went before, which was all the glamorous and the smoothiness, to something that's like, okay, this is very, very wrong. This is obviously leading them up to the point. Obviously, I've seen this so many times that I know a lot of the lines, and I know that I'm waiting for it, but I'm still going to give it a 5 because you're with Henry Hill from the start until the end.
A bit of Lorraine Bracco as well.
Yeah, but it's kind of his story, isn't it? That basically he wanted all this and he had it.
Mm.
And then he just kind of like gave it away a bit. And also he rats everyone else out to save himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically he's sort of responsible for the end of that kind of era. And then he like rats everyone else as well so that no one else can have it.
What's quite funny, what's quite interesting, sorry, 5 for you, what's reading up on this and the real Henry Hill, he was quoted by saying, I'm surprised I've not killed me.
Yeah.
And he died due to like natural causes. And I generally don't understand why they didn't kill him. And even though he wasn't a made man because he wasn't allowed to be, is
witness protection program must be very good.
No.
He messed up in the witness protection program.
He didn't stay in it. He just fucked around. So they were like, get out.
Breaking the rules of it. So they
doesn't surprise me. Yeah.
So he went, because he went to the premiere of Goodfellas. Henry Hill was there. It's like, what are you doing, man? It sounds properly insane. And the fact that he was there in plain sight. He wasn't even hiding. He was just there in plain sight, walking down the streets and stuff like that. It was a bit insane.
Guess there was no gangsters left to get him. They were all...
No, there's still gangsters. There's still plenty of gangsters. There's Sopranos gangsters. I'm going to go for 5 as well, because I think every time, even though it's like third or fourth time, there is things again which I forget happen, and then they hook me back in. And like I said at the start, like I said before, just that first stabbing is like, oh, this is right at the start. Okay, good. Let's settle in. It's just even things like seeing Samuel L. Jackson there and trying to remember which characters are in Sopranos and in here again. And just a lot of these things were kind of ancillary, but also there's story beats which I forget, like when Karen, she sees Robert De Niro for the last time, and he said, just go down there and you get your thing.
Do you want to have some Dior dressing?
Yeah, just go down there. And I was like, oh fuck, yeah, this is really
so uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's so tense. So it's things like that which I forget because they're not part of the kind of, they're not the funny house, you know, go get your fucking shine box bit, which I think are really endearing. So once I'm in it, and I had lots of time, lots of fun watching it again. And that gives me, that gives us an overall score of 4.18750.
It's pretty strong.
Yeah, strong. And we, let's go to the guys on Twitter. As always, we're reviewing, we go to Twitter before recording and say, in this case, we're reviewing Goodfellas with Rosie Wilby and Viv Groskop. Have you seen it? Gives your thoughts for an on-air shout-out on FlixWatcher. Viv, do you want to take the top one?
Top film tip says, shoe-shining insults, unhinged anecdotes, mob murder, and creeping cocaine-fueled paranoia in menacingly amusing masterwork. Whoa. Hashtag Goodfellas. It's all there. A rare example of flawless filmmaking steeped in character, nuance, nostalgia, and ambitious esprit. Five clowns and five mafia guys.
Strong emoji work there.
Yeah. Rosie.
Yeah, strong. The Countdown Pod says, not just the greatest gangster movie ever made, but one of the best films ever crafted. Scorsese at his best. Five stars all the way.
Helen.
This is from Elizabeth Campbell. I rewatched this movie recently and it lives up to all the hype. Really visceral storytelling and some iconic performances from Ray Liotta and Joe Pesci. You really feel all the highs and lows, the glamour, the violence, and the uncertainty of the gangster life. Five stars.
I am Elizabeth Campbell.
Nice. Elizabeth Campbell, former guest, sat in your, no, not, didn't sit in your seat. But yeah, thank you so much, guys. Can you just start off by telling the guys where we can, they can find you online? And then we'll say goodbye.
I am at Viv Groskop on Instagram and Twitter. So please do get in touch and let me know how many times you've seen Goodfellas and talk to me about how amazing you think it is, because it's the best film ever and I will not hear any difference. You can check out my Room Owning Women of Instagram. Every day I feature a different woman who's really great at owning the room. And the book is called How to Own the Room, Women and the Art of Brilliant Speaking.
Rosie.
I am at Rosie Wilby on Twitter, and there's a Instagram feed for my podcast, The Breakup Monologues, and that is at Breakup Monologues. So do get in touch with me, and maybe not so much about gangster movies as about love, sex, fidelity, sexuality, and marriage and divorce and all of that kind of stuff. I'm always, always happy to talk about the conundrum of romantic love. So yeah, do get in touch about anything like that, and you'll probably find me posting on Twitter various sort of quizzes and questions about whether you sleep with your partner, I'd sleep in the same bed as your partner and things like that,
or absolutely. Sleep with the fishes, as you will be after this, Rosie.
That was a threat. We've caught that.
Oh, yeah. We've caught that on mic. Recorded now. So if I die, you know.
Prime suspect over there.
It was VG over there.
I'll be made. VG. I won't mind. I'll be made.
You'll be all right.
You're not 100% Sicilian, are you?
Oh, I'm not. That's the problem. I know.
You sound like you want to be.
Yeah.
Oh, I was dangerous. Joe
this is what happens.
All the way.
She thinks she's a made woman, but, you know.
There is a Russian mafia. You speak Russian, don't you?
I do. Yes, свободно говорю по-русски.
That's another threat right there. We've just got that.
I don't even know what she said.
Okay, thank you very much, guys.
Thanks for coming on.
Bye.
Bye. Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the mighty people for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K, Wood Audio. Tell him FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.